you open up the Courier Journal recently, you'd see stories about the growing meth problem. You'd see stories about constant political fighting and corruption, epidemic sexual abuse scandals, a steady march of immorality, an increase in violence. When we look around, we see this ever-expanding list of heartbreaking and troublesome issues, and it can be overwhelming. Not only in our nation and in our world, but when you add to that issues that all of us have at home, things that worry us, things that are going on at our workplace, in our neighborhood, the things that crop up from time to time in any local congregation, it's very easy to feel overwhelmed. It's easy to be discouraged and to think, you know, something needs to be done. But what am I going to do? I'm only one person. When you think about, though, we read the stories in the Bible like Abraham. What difference did Abraham make? Just one man. Yet what difference did he make to the history of the world? What difference did Ruth make to the family of David, or Jonathan to the life of David? What difference did Peter make on the day of Pentecost? What difference did Paul make to the spread of the gospel throughout the entire world? What difference did Barnabas make in the life of John Mark? The Bible tells us in no uncertain terms that one person can have, even when faced with what some might think are impossible odds, that one person can make a huge difference. The kind of the theme verse that I wanted to use for tonight is in Joshua 23 and in verse 10. For after long years of fighting to take the land of Canaan, Joshua looks back on the history of the things that had happened. And he told Israel that he wanted them to remember that just one, in Joshua 23:10, just one of your men puts to flight 1,000. For the Lord your God is he who fights for you, just as he promised you. What can one person do? Tonight, I want us to see how one person can have a huge impact in a home, in a congregation, in a society, and in eternity. And so we'll begin in Genesis chapter 6 and notice the impact that just one person can have in a family. Think about Noah in Genesis chapter 6. Now, normally, when we think about Noah, we think about how important Noah was in saving mankind. If there had been no Noah, there would be no Michael Ann and no Matt and no Baker and no Gary Jr. Right? If there's no Noah, there's nobody. And we think of Noah's role in saving mankind, but have you ever thought about the importance of Noah as a husband and as a father? When you think about what we're told in Genesis 6 about the corruption, it says that everybody in the world was wicked. It says that everybody, that every intent of the thoughts of their heart was only evil continuously. That they were corrupt, that there was constant violence. And then there was Noah, who was righteous, who was blameless, who walked with God. Think about the sons of Noah. As they see their neighbors, as they see the fathers of their friends, think about the sons of Noah who see that guy over there beats his wife, and that guy over there's drunk all the time, and that guy over there's dishonest, and that guy over there cheats in business. And you got all this corruption and all of this wickedness, and then the sons of Noah come home and see Dad. And he's righteous. And he walks with God. The part of Louisville where I grew up, across the courtyard from where we lived, there was drug abuse that went on. And in the apartment, one of the apartments above that, there was drunkenness and child abuse that was a regular occurrence. And in our neighborhood, there was youth violence, there was crime, there was immorality, there were broken homes. There were all kinds of things like that in the environment where my family lived. But in my home, which wasn't perfect by any means, But in my home, thanks to my mom and dad, and then when I was seven, and my father passed away, thanks to the hard work of my mother, our home was a haven in the midst of all of that. Our home was a place where God was important, where the Bible was important, where church was important, where doing the right thing was important. And I can't tell you what that meant to me, to be in an environment with so much immorality and so much chaos and difficulty, to have a home that was a haven of peace, that was a haven of godliness. The world is falling apart. Is your home a haven because of your influence? If you are a husband, remember what God said in Ephesians chapter 5. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Do you do that? As a husband in your home, do you love your wife as much as Christ loved the church? You say, yeah, because Jesus died for the church, and I would die for my wife in a heartbeat. But will you listen to her when she's talking and there's a football game on? See, technology's made it easy for us. Now we got DVR. Right? Now you can pause it and just start it right back up, and you don't have to miss a play. And we won't even do that, right? While we're watching football, our wives are lucky if they get a grunt. You know, if they get a sideways glance out of us. We say that we die for our spouses, and yet we won't even listen to them when there's something on TV that we want to watch, right? Husbands, love your wives. Are we doing that? As fathers, are we bringing up our children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord? In how many Christian homes does that job fall to mom? In how many Christian homes is it the mom who's doing the Bible studies, who's doing the praying, who's doing the talking, the answering the questions, making sure the kids are ready for church and have the blanks filled in and all of that? But he doesn't put it on moms. He says that that is a father's responsibility. To the women, Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 1 says that the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down. As a woman in your home, are you building your home by the things that you say? Are you building up your home by the things that you do? Are you building up your home by your influence, or are you tearing it down with your own hands? Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Can I read that again? Children, my children, listen. Obey your parents in the Lord, because this is right. If you are a young person still under the authority of your parents at home, are you obeying them because it's the right thing to do? But he goes farther than that in verse 2, and he says, children, honor your father and your mother. Respect them. Speak to them with respect. Use respectful tones. Use respectful words. Are you doing that? The question for each of us is, what is our home like because we're there? Don't discount the influence of one person. You can make a difference in a home. You can also make a difference in a congregation. Turn over to Romans chapter 16 and notice what Paul says about Phoebe. Romans chapter 16 and verses 1 and 2. And notice there in Romans chapter 16 and verses 1 and 2 that Phoebe is called a servant of the church at Cenchrea, a helper of many, and of myself as well. You know, people a lot of times want to make this some sort of official position, a deaconess position. There's no reason for that. There's no reason to make it that. It just simply says that Phoebe had made up her mind to diligently serve the members of her congregation. She was simply so devoted to her congregation that she was known as a servant of it. When people describe your relationship to the congregation you attend, what do they call you? A member? Do they call you an attendee? Would they call you an occasional visitor? Or would they call you a servant? Would they call you a servant because you have been the helper of many? Who in your congregation have you helped? Who in your congregation have you served? What have you done? How diligent have you been? Do you have a select few, a group of people that you're diligent about helping? Because you share a last name, or you share, you know, a personality, or are you a diligent helper of many? You say, well, I can't really do anything. I don't have a lot of ability to help. Do you have a phone? Do you have a car? Do you have a stove? Can you pick up a phone and make a phone call? Can you write a card? Can you speak to somebody at church? It doesn't have to be something spectacular. I remember when I was in my 20s and still living in Kentucky, standing in the foyer of the church building of the Valley Station Church of Christ. I remember exactly where I was in the foyer. Talking to a sister who is now gone on. Her name was Hazel Ritter. And she was absolutely the salt of the earth. And I will never forget standing there, and that's been, I was in my 20s, and so that was 5-6 years ago, I guess. That wasn't supposed to be funny at all. I don't know why you laughed at that. That's been 30 years ago. And I remember standing and talking to Hazel Ritter, and her taking my hand and saying to me, I pray for you every day. And I call you by name. I remember word for word what she said to me. That wasn't much. And she probably never thought another thing about it. But that encouragement has stuck with me all of these years. It doesn't have to be spectacular. But are you serving the congregation? You can make a difference in your church. Thirdly, you can make a difference in a society. Turn over to Ezekiel chapter 22. Ezekiel chapter 22, and notice the possibility that you have to make a difference. Ezekiel chapter 22 and verse 29. In Ezekiel 22:29, God says that the people of Israel, he's talking about, the Jews, have practiced oppression and committed robbery. They've wronged the poor and needy, have oppressed the sojourner without justice. In other words, they've been very, very wicked. Because of that, in verse 31, God says, I've poured out my indignation on them. I punished them. They're suffering because of their sin. But I want you to notice verse 30. In verse 30, God says, it didn't have to be that way. Notice what God says. Their wickedness led to judgment. But verse 30, God says, I searched for what? A church? I searched for a congregation? I searched for a large group of people? I searched for a family? What did God say? God said there was all of this wickedness and my judgment was coming, and all I wanted in verse 30 was what? Just one man. I searched for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand in the gap before me for the land so I would not destroy it, but I found no one. Think about that. God says all I needed to keep from destroying that society was one person, and I couldn't even find one. One person would have made all the difference in the history of that nation. That is still the case. Helen Keller said, I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. And I want you to think about that. Helen Keller, who was born blind and deaf, who a woman in the 1800s, who if anybody in the world would have had an excuse for sitting around and not doing anything, it would have been her. And yet she didn't. She became one of the most powerful heroes, male or female, handicapped or not, one of the most powerful heroes in American history, because she refused to let her difficulties stand in the way and use them as an excuse. What do I possibly have as an excuse that I can use for not making a difference? I'm only one, but I am one, and I can do something. What can you do? Well, I just want to mention three things to you as far as things that we can do every day that are going to make a difference. Number one, if you're going to make a difference, you have to be different. If you're going to make a difference, you have to be different. If you fit in, if somebody could follow you around all day and watch your behavior and see how you act and listen to how you talk, and at the end of the day, if somebody said, is that person a Christian or not a Christian? If that person could say, you know, I don't have any idea. I didn't see any difference between them and the people they were around. I saw no difference between their behavior and talk and everybody else's. In order to make a difference, we have to be different. That's why Jesus said, you are light, but you can't hide the light. That's why Jesus said, you're salt. But the salt can't lose its flavor. In order to make a difference, we have to be different. Number two, we have to be intentional. You and I as Christians have to make up our minds every day before we leave the house. Every person that I meet today, I am going to try to influence in a spiritual way. Do you realize that when Jesus met the woman at the well in Samaria and he turned that conversation from physical things to spiritual things, do you realize that was not an accident? That didn't just happen? That was Jesus intentionally going about his day, and everybody he came in contact with, everybody he met, was an opportunity to influence people spiritually. So we have to be intentional. And I would say this, that those of us who are older Christians must intentionally create and develop relationships with every young person we meet, both inside and outside the church. Too many times as older Christians, our mind is on other stuff. It's on our life and what we've got going on and our jobs and all of that stuff. And we don't really notice and take the time with young people the way that we should. We have to be intentional. If you want to make a difference in the lives of young people. You can make a difference. How can a person make a difference? It's not because of you. Whether or not you can make a difference depends on you, but not because of your own qualities. Rahab made a difference, and she had been a prostitute. Paul made a difference. He had been a murderer. Naaman's life was saved by a slave girl. The mother of the Messiah was a poverty-stricken teenager. Israel's greatest king was a shepherd. You don't have to be somebody to make a big difference. Remember, let's go back to Joshua 23 and verse 10 and notice that verse one more time and then we're going to close. Joshua chapter 23 and verse 10. Joshua chapter 23 and verse 10 says that one of your men puts to flight 1,000. Not because you're a good fighter, not because you're Rambo, not because of your weaponry, not because of your skill. One of your men puts to flight 1,000, for the Lord your God is he who fights for you. You don't have to be anybody. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to be talented. All you have to do is allow God's power to work through you. Somebody once said that there are three kinds of people in the world. Those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who sit around and wonder what just happened. What person are you? Are you a person who's making things happen? Are you a person who's active in this congregation, serving and teaching and helping? Are you a person who's out in the community making a difference, sharing the gospel, being an influence? Are you a person that your home is better because you're in it? Is your home happier? Is it calmer? Is it more godly? Is it better because you're in it? Are you a person who makes a difference? If you're not a Christian, we'd love to talk to you tonight about how to make that happen. If you are not a child of God, we would love to help you to make that happen. Maybe you're not sure what you need to do. We'd love to study with you and talk to you from the scriptures about what it is that you need to do. If you are a Christian, And you know that you're not making a difference. You know you're not standing out. You know you're not serving the way that you should. We want to help you with that. We would love to talk to anybody tonight privately after church, or you're welcome to come forward, take a seat on the front as we stand and sing together.